The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at midnight, February 13th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
K-Voice of Resistance!
I come to you in the spirit of Coretta Scott King, who taught us that abuse to women is violence, but starving a child is also violence, neglecting school children is violence, punishing a mother and her family is violence, discrimination against a working person is violence. Ghetto housing is violence. Ignoring health care is violence. Contempt for poverty is violence. And an apathetic attitude that refuses to do anything is also violence.
Reverend Dr. William Barber.
Hello, I'm Kelly,
and this is K Voice of Resistance, your resistance podcast.
Resist!
I'm just a bill.
Yes, I'm only
a bill. It's a new week in Congress, and something very strange is happening. Something that some members of Congress have never experienced. A bipartisan debate. Think about it. Up till now, it's just been backroom doors and partisan Republican BS. This week, Congress will take its first step towards advancing an immigration proposal that addresses the status of the Dreamers.
Here to stay.
Which are, of course, unauthorized immigrants who were brought to this country as children.
As children,
through no fault of their own. The Senate convened on Monday to start the debate on immigration reform and a procedural vote that kicked off the open amendment process, which senators will use to introduce a variety of proposals throughout the week. What their final bill will look like is anyone's guess. It's something.
But I know I'll be a law someday, at least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Continue to call senators and let them know that they must pass a clean DACA bill and that we support the Dreamers.
Here to stay!
The House will begin its week on Tuesday, and we'll be considering a bill to sanction Hamas for the use of civilians as human shields, and a resolution calling for the recovery and identification of all missing and unaccounted for U.S. military personnel. Wednesday, the House will consider bills related to mortgage disclosures for federal insurance charges and interest rates on loans sold or transferred to a non-bank. The House will then vote Thursday on a bill establishing a program to educate state and local governments and property owners on strategies for promoting access to public accommodations for persons with disabilities. All right, let's get to some news. In yet another setback for progress, the LGBTQ community and the rights of Americans, the U.S. Department of Education will no longer investigate complaints from transgender students who have been denied access to bathrooms corresponding with their gender identity.
Oh no!
Education Department spokesperson Liz Hill told BuzzFeed, who broke the story, quote,
"We suck and we're hateful prudes that put dogma before people and in no way follow the loving teachings of Jesus," unquote.
Now, what she really said was, quote,
"Title IX prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex, not gender identity," unquote. So screw those people.
This matters because, as BuzzFeed explained, quote,
"It's the first time officials have asserted this position publicly as an interpretation of the law. No formal announcement has been made," unquote.
Human Rights Campaign legal director Sarah Warblow said in a statement that, quote, "The department's failure to act on conflicts with the law in multiple jurisdictions, including federal circuits, further emboldens those who wish to discriminate against transgender students." Once again, Secretary DeVos proves that she is not interested in protecting transgender students and is instead choosing to advance the dangerous Trump-Pence anti-LGBTQ agenda, unquote. All right.
"Some folks back home decided they wanted a law passed, so they called their local congressman, and he said, 'You're right, there ought to be a law.'"
Let's talk about drugs, baby. Despite Donald's declaration to lower drug prices in his State of the Union address, and despite the focus on health care that dominated Congress for much of 2017, a bill with wide bipartisan support that would lower drug prices and save the federal government $3.8 billion over a decade is stalled on Capitol Hill. gotta get money out of politics. The bill is called the CREATES Act. It focuses on increasing competition by removing roadblocks to companies trying to develop generic alternatives to name brand drugs. According to the Washington Post, quote, "It's common for pharmaceutical companies to try to block competitors from creating generic versions of their products by either refusing to sell them the large quantities needed for the development process or by abusing special safety protocols as a way of safeguarding their drugs from competition," unquote. Corrupt assholes. The CREATES Act would allow companies looking to develop generics to sue named brand companies that refuse to send the samples needed for testing. It would also authorize the Food and Drug Administration to develop alternative safety protocols if brand name companies block generic companies' participation in safety protocols. Which is great. Senator Patrick Leahy sponsored the bill. The 16 co-sponsors include Republican Ted Cruz, Republican Tom Cotton, Democrat Dianne Feinstein, and Democrat Amy Klobuchar. When you have both Dianne Feinstein and Tom Cotton on the same bill, you know you have something worth pursuing. The FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb told the Post that the bill would be the best way to, quote, "speed up the entry of cheaper generics into the marketplace and lower the price of drugs overall," unquote. It is a somewhat weak attempt at fixing a big problem, but at least it is doing something. Because critics of the bill argue that the list of drugs that would be affected by the legislation is small. It's less than 45. And there is the potential the increase in litigation would end up increasing costs to patients and taxpayers. Despite the cost savings projected by the Congressional Budget Office, this bill has not rolled into any funding bill yet approved by Congress. This bill seems like the least they can do.
This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
Our hopeless president is being unhelpful again.
What?
Surprise, surprise. In a speech in Cincinnati this week, Donald told a crowd that the opioid epidemic...
People form blue ribbon committees. They do everything they can. And frankly, I have a different take on it. My take is you have to get really, really tough, really mean with the drug pushers and the drug dealers.
So, look, I don't put much stock in anything that man says, but we can kind of decipher certain conclusions from his inane ramblings. He is all about punishment and not about treatment. Continuing the failed war on drugs.
Really mean.
The Blue Ribbon Committees, Donald mentioned, could be the President's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis. The commission is chaired by former New Jersey governor and Krispy Kreme spokesmodel Chris Christie, who issued over 50 recommendations. 50! Surprising no one, the administration has only followed up on a few. Experts say that the United States is in the throes of an opioid epidemic, and more than 2 million Americans have become dependent on or abuse prescription pain pills and street drugs. And according to government estimates, some 50,000 Americans died from an opioid overdose in 2016. That is 137 people a day, or roughly one death every 12 hours from prescription painkillers, heroin, or the synthetic opioid fentanyl. That is more Americans dying of drug overdoses in 2016 than died in the entirety of the Vietnam War. I think we're still waiting on numbers for 2017. And of course, people who become dependent on pain pills may switch to heroin because it is less expensive than prescription drugs. The National Institute on Drug Abuse estimates that half of young people who inject heroin turn to the street drug after abusing prescription painkillers. The number of overdose deaths related to heroin increased 533% between 2002 and 2016, from an estimated 2,089 in 2002 to 13,219 in 2016. The report attributed the low rate to severe shortages in the supply of care, with some areas of the country lacking affordable options for treatment, which can lead to waiting periods of weeks or even months. In fact, according to a 2016 report by the Surgeon General, just 10% of Americans with drug use disorder obtain specialty treatment. And those who do receive treatment, according to Vox, are likely receiving it at a facility ill-equipped to deal with opioids. There are whole counties, whole states, that don't have access to the medications that are effective in treating opioid addiction. Clearly, America is not taking this crisis seriously. If the U.S. isn't making good use of the even bare minimum of evidence-based treatment, it's no wonder the opioid crisis keeps getting worse. And here's the thing. There is stigma attached to these meds, which is a big reason they're not widely used. But the stigma comes from lack of understanding about addiction itself. The addiction is not about, or the problem is not the drug, per se. The problem is when drug use becomes a personal or social burden. For example, putting someone at the risk of an overdose or leading someone to commit crimes to obtain drugs. Medications for opioid addiction work by starving opioid withdrawal and cravings without leading to a significant risk of overdose. While professionals can treat the core concerns with addiction, which tend to be emotional, situational, and other factors in a person's life. But the big problem is the lack of federal investment and attention. So what has our president, who so loves his people from the forgotten parts of America, the only people he cares about, who are becoming addicted to these drugs, done to combat the opioid epidemic? The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services is allowing states to request waivers to use Medicaid to pay for residential drug treatment at certain facilities. Donald signed the Interdict Act, which requires Customs and Border Protection to increase the number of chemical screening devices available to CBP officers to interdict fentanyl and other synthetic opioids that are illegally imported to the United States.
Really mean.
And Attorney General Jeff Van Lorga of Sessions announced earlier this week that Americans could command the opioid crisis if they take over-the-counter medications for pain and tough it out.
That's not helping.
Sessions has also vowed to crack down on pharmacies and doctors who overprescribe opioids. And, woo! Good old Donald promised he'd donate his third quarter salary, around $100,000, to the Department of Health and Human Services for his fight against opioids. Which is adorable. Alterum, a nonprofit research and consulting institute dedicated to improving healthcare, arrived at a cost estimate of $95 billion to effectively combat the crisis. So yay! Donald declared a public health emergency in October, but he's really doing crap about it. He's yet to request any funds from Congress to combat the epidemic, and there's no head of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, nor has he nominated anyone to head the Drug Enforcement Agency. Donald's punishment over treatment serves only private prisons and the expense of the people.
Who taught you how to do this stuff?
You, all right? I learned it by watching you.
All right, let's change the subject. We're going to talk about family leave. Senators from both sides of the aisle are backing separate paid family leave proposals. The first comes from the Independent Women's Forum. The Independent Women's Forum is a politically conservative American nonprofit organization focused on economic policy issues of concern to those of us with inside fun parts. The plan outlined by IWF would, quote, offer new parents the opportunity to collect early Social Security benefits after the arrival of their child in exchange for their agreeing to defer the collection of their Social Security retirement benefits, unquote.
You're not helping!
So, yay! You can take time off now, but when you retire, you're on your own, bitch. As the Washington Post explained, quote, the IWF estimates that the plan would replace 45% of the average parent's income for a period of up to 12 weeks. In exchange, that parent would have to defer retirement by roughly 6 weeks to offset the cost. According to IWF, the average wage worker would receive $1,175 per month. Of course, people like Republican Marco Rubio said the IWF's plan, quote, would not only represent conservatism meeting the challenges of the 21st century, it would remain true to Social Security's fundamental principle of providing assistance to dependents in our care, unquote. But Democratic Senator Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut criticized the plan by saying, quote, workers should not have to permanently cut their Social Security retirement benefits in order to spend time with their newborn child, and any paid leave plan that reflects the needs of working people and families must address the needs to deal with a personal or family member's serious illness. Unquote. Fair point. And then we have the Family and Medical Insurance Leave, Family Act. Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand proposed a bill that calls for a 0.2% employee payroll tax and a 0.2% employer tax that would fund up to 12 weeks of paid family leave. The Family Act would pay 66% of monthly wages. The National Partnership for Women and Families, which supports the Family Act, estimates that average workers would pay less than $1.50 per week in new taxes. So, they're battling it out, but Democrats don't have much control, so we'll see. Here's your reminder that Puerto Rico still undergoing a humanitarian crisis. After Hurricane Katrina in 2005, the federal government approved $60 billion in disaster funding within 10 days, and $115 billion overall. Hurricanes Irma and Maria hit Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Hundreds of thousands of U.S. citizens are living without power. Schools, hospitals, and other basic institutions are struggling to provide services. Previously, Congress approved just $15 billion in relief aid in September. In October, they deigned to approve another $36.5 billion. And the latest spending bill includes $89.3 billion for dedicated disaster relief. To be shared, Puerto Rico alone estimates that it'll take $94 billion to rebuild itself. And some of this federal money goes to the federal disaster relief programs generally. $28 billion is marked for community development, block grant disaster recovery funding, a program of the Housing and Urban Development Administration, which deals with long-term recovery. $23.5 billion will replenish the FEMA primary fund, and $17.4 billion will go to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to carry out flood mitigation and resiliency projects. $2.7 billion will go to schools impacted by disasters. Long story short, it's simply not enough.
Radical Islamic terrorism. Let's talk about it.
All right, I'm about to throw a lot at you, so bear with me. Some facts. According to the Cattow Institute, a total of 3,037 people have been murdered on U.S. soil by 182 foreign-born terrorists. That's from 1975 through October 31st of 2017. Of those 182 foreign-born terrorists, 63 of them initially entered with green cards. The annual chance of being murdered in a terror attack on U.S. soil committed by a foreign-born person stands at a terrifying 1,308,094 per year.
Oh, clutch my pearls. The foreigner's gonna kill us.
Donald Trump's party, on the other hand, because let's be honest, Donald's base is not just the Republican Party, it is the neo-Nazi party, or what they now prefer to be called, and the media is happy to oblige. The alt-right is giving foreign-born terrorists a run for their money. The Southern Poverty Law Center, SPLC, counted over 100 people killed or injured by alleged perpetrators influenced by the so-called alt-right just in 2017. A movement that continues to access the mainstream and reach young adults. The alt-right, the now infamous subculture and political movement consisting of vicious trolls, racist activists, and bitter misogynists. On December 7th of 2017, a 21-year-old white male posing as a student entered Aztec High School in rural New Mexico and began firing a handgun, killing two students before taking his own life. It, like most school shootings these days, went largely ignored by the media. Online activity of this asshole showed him to be a member of the Man Baby Alt-Right Club. According to the Huffington Post, white supremacists in the United States killed more than twice as many people in 2017 as they did the year before, and were responsible for far more murders than domestic Islamic extremists, helping make 2017 the fifth deadliest year on record for extremist violence in America.
We're winning. We're winning. We're winning.
From 2018 through 2017, according to the Anti-Defamation League, right-wing extremists have killed 274 people. That's 71% of all the 387 murders committed by extremists over the past 10 years. Meanwhile, The Guardian reported that court documents reveal California police worked with and expressed sympathy for neo-Nazis while working to identify anti-fascist activities and Trump protesters. A Dallas Morning News report reported that the Trump regime capped the number of refugees it would admit at 45,000 for the fiscal year of 2018, down from 85,000 allowed in Obama's final year in office. While the first 4 months of the fiscal year, 2018, just 6,700 refugees have been admitted, putting the U.S. on place to take only 20,000 refugees, the lowest since the 1980s Refugee Act gave U.S. leaders the power to set mother-effing caps. Reuters reported that the Trump regime plans to revamp a U.S. government program called Countering Violent Extremism from countering all violent ideologies to solely focusing on Islamist extremism. And since this administration is afraid of anything brown, last week the FBI released information debunking some of Donald's propaganda. Border Patrol agent Rogelio Martinez, whose death in November 2017 was used by Donald to push for his border wall, was a result of an accident and not homicide. WAPO reported that an employee of the Montana Department of Labor resigned in a show of resistance after learning that ICE planned to subpoena the state labor data, which would be used to hunt down and deport undocumented workers. CNN reported that Amir Adi, who lived in the U.S. for almost 40 years, 40 years, and he has a wife and four daughters, and who Ohio Representative Democrat Tim Ryans described as a pillar of his community, was deported to Jordan by ICE. Since Donald usurped office, ICE arrests have increased by 42%. Tens of thousands of undocumented immigrants have been arrested, including many like Adi, who are deeply rooted and have no criminal convictions. Reuters reported that Donald's Department of Homeland Security has drafted rules that would allow ICE to scrutinize immigrants' use of certain taxpayer-funded public benefits for them and their children to determine if they could become a public burden. Under the draft, a person who would be considered a quote-unquote public charge if they depended on any government assistance, the result of which is effectively barring lower and middle-income people from immigrating. And our president last week wanted a government shutdown so he could get through his damn wall. But it's not all fear about anything darker than a peanut in this government of ours. Damn, snowflakes. It's also about loving the corporations, crony capitalism, meddling, media silencing, general fascistic behaviors, and profits over people. Corrupt snowflakes. Reuters reported that acting director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the hateful Mick Mulvaney, planned to pull back from a full-scale probe of how hackers stole personal data of 143 Americans from Equifax. While The Intercept reported coal lobbyist Andrew Wheeler hosted fundraisers for Senator John Brasso and Jim Inhofe, Republicans, on the Committee on Environment and Public Works ahead of his nomination for a top EPA position. And then, an association of healthcare journalists reported that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services threatened to ban a reporter from press calls after he refused to delete parts of a published story at the request of CMS Administrator Seema Verma. The agency followed through with its threat last week when Virgil Dickinson of Modern Healthcare said his phone went mute during a CMS press call and a woman's voice told him he was not allowed to participate. And in the quickly shifting U.S. media landscape, Time Inc.'s takeover by Meredith, with funding by the Koch brothers, was completed. And Newsweek is in disarray after being raided by the Manhattan DA. Daily Beast reported that a media startup, Redfish, a Berlin-based media collective marketed as grassroots, is actually supported by the Kremlin and in most of its in-house staff last work for Russian government media. Okay, here are a few quick-fire things that we may have missed in the news under the, to steal a phrase, fire and fury of the White House and the media being obsessed with Omarosa on Big Brother. Priorities, people! All right. The two largest teachers' unions were blocked from entering the Education Department building to deliver complaints in the form of 80,000 report cards to Betsy Bible-Begging DeVos because they did not have an appointment. Congressional Republicans took another step in quietly dismantling Obamacare, disbanding the Interdependent Payment Advisory Board, a board designed to tame runaway Medicare costs should they ever arise. Amusingly, Judge Gonzalo Curiel, whom Donald described in 2016 as a hater and Mexican who disliked Donald because of his strong border stance, by the way, he's from here, will hear a key environmental case on Donald's border wall with Mexico. The Hill reported that Senator Chuck Grassley sent a letter to rebuke Jeff Zamboga on Sessions. Saying a memo which instructs the Department of Justice employees to not communicate with Congress without pre-approval discourages whistleblowers and does not comply with the law.
Last Tuesday, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said that Russia is already gearing up to meddle in 2018 midterms, following the playbook it used in 2016. T. Rex Tillerson warned us that we are not better prepared, and that Russia will adapt as well. Not that he's suggesting we do anything. A poll by NBC News SurveyMonkey found 79% of Americans are concerned our voting systems might be vulnerable to computer hackers, while just 50% say our federal government is doing enough about it. Okay, this is a big one. Now follow this feedback loop. On Thursday, Trump TV, Fox quote-unquote news, reported Senator Mark Warner, ranking Democrat of Senate Intelligence Committee, had extensive contact via texting with a lobbyist for a Russian oligarch who was offering him access to Christopher Steele. Russian bots all over Twitter and Facebook went hog wild, hashtagging Mark Warner, citing this connection. But a week prior, Julian Assange of the newly minted Trump's WikiLeaks messaged a Twitter account he thought belonged to Fox News' Sean Hannity, saying, quote, "I have some news about Mark Warner," unquote. Fox News broke the story on Warner. Then on Thursday, shortly after the Fox News story, Donald tweeted, quote, "Senator Mark Warner caught having extensive contact with lobbyist for Russian oligarch," unquote.
This is ridiculous!
And in a rare show of integrity, Republican Senator Marco Rubio, also on the Senate Intelligence Committee, tweeted in response to the Fox News story, quote, "Senator Warner fully discussed this to the committee 4 months ago. He has had zero impact on our work," unquote. All right, now follow this terrifying evolution. The New York Times reported that U.S. spies paid a $100,000 down payment in Berlin on September 2017 to a Russian who promised to deliver stolen NSA cyber weapons, as well as compromising information on Donald. Reportedly, the Russian handed over data in October and December, but it was all related to the 2016 election and alleged ties between Donald and Russia, but not the NSA or CIA hacking tools. The CIA then cut ties with him. But The Intercept further reported that Donald appointee, CIA Director Mike Pompeo, the same who's turning the CIA into a 1950s boys club, was at the time reluctant to stay involved in the operation, fearing the information obtained from the Russian would be Trump-related material. Some of the sources complained that the CIA has become so politicized under Pompeo that agents fear taking in materials that would be damaging to Trump.
Oh no.
And also feared Donald's blowback on their agencies and firing senior officials.
Oh crap.
This is a whole intelligence agency that has been compromised, while the right is currently destroying yet another agency, the FBI. We are a democracy in crisis. Okay. Thank you for sticking with me on this episode of K Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download this show on crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also on citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kaleida Voice and on Facebook, where you'll find all the stories I've discussed on this show and more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer, 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
If we ever needed to vote, we sure do need to vote now. And anybody that doesn't vote, my grandmama had a word for you. It's called trifling. It's time to get up and know that love can win, and justice can win, and righteousness can win when we organize. Black and white and brown and red and yellow and old and young and Jewish and Muslim and Christian and those who do not have a faith but they believe in a moral agenda. It's time to get up, gay and straight. No more fighting each other. Let's fight racism. Let's fight sexism. Let's fight the extremists. It's time to get up and demand justice for all. It's time to get up because we are the people that know we can take a word like shithole and turn it into fertilizer and grow a new movement. It's time to get up and vote people out of office who do wrong.